I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Come with me to a shack of mystery to beat conspiracies, curiosity. Spin the tales of Daniel and Robosaur. Defy explanation if you're wanting more. All my fightings, government denies. J-Clone guides you through the lies. Flat Earth claims, they say there's no proof. But we know the truth, we're living proof. No life without government's hand, manipulation across the land. They say we're free, but that's their lie. We see the truth with open eyes. Mel's hole, a mystery unsolved. Tumor sealed, government's involved. Change the world, speak the truth, expose the lies. That's our move. Off the grid, we raise our quail. Homeschool our kids, government's education fail. Collected rain, though it's illegal. Natural resources can't be controlled by their evil. Conspiracies, they're all around. In this shack, the truth is found. Living free from their control. We know the truth, we won't be sold. Living proof. No life without government's hand. Manipulation across the land. They say we're free, but that's their lie. We see the truth with open eyes. Mel's hole, a mystery unsolved.
Costume, DW, headspace. We're back in the shack again. We're back in the shack again. I'm Wilbur.
Yes.
Say your name.
Oh, Daniel.
Oh, and welcome back to DW Conspiracy Shack. Your number one place.
Yes.
Your number one stop for news and information and truth and righteousness and
this is the dumbest thing.
And just this is where the you see where the sausage is made here at DW. We get in the back room and see how it's made, and we tell you guys. That's the goal, anyways.
We tell you guys.
Yeah, we tell you the truth, how it's what's really going on. We have to decipher the messages. You know, we're solving the riddles, and then we present the information to you, so you have a better and more informed look at the world, so you can make better decisions for yourself, and your family, and your friends, and your kin, and your neighbors, and your everyone around you, because only. Everything starts with you, the individual, and then we extrapolate out. And that's how you help all those around us. But you can only help yourself first before you can help others. And that's how it works. It's how we get stronger together. That's what the shack's all about. That's why you're here. You know, I'm not so angry today. But there's been a lot going on in the world that does...
I have no fight.
There's been a lot going on. Before we get into our topic today, did you, there's been a politician in the news that's been making waves lately.
I just don't care.
I know, but it's important.
You want to have sex with this man?
I don't want to, but I do.
You do.
I've been praising him for years before he even started the show, and now it's bled over into the show because I believe he's a good man. Mr. Thomas Massey's making moves in Congress.
I just can't believe you're such a shill.
Well, he's pulling out the darkness into the light.
Sure.
And they just passed that bill, at least in the House, to finally reveal the Epstein files and the names within. But our House Rep leader, Mr. Johnson, which is a POS in my opinion, always has been, paid shill. Quisling would be the word. Doing everything they can to redact all the names, to protect all their friends and family and donors, and to get them not exposed to the public. Because we need things exposed to the public. Only when you shine light on things can it, what's the word? Purify or de-germ it. Got to kill the germs with light. And there's a lot of germs running around, if you know what I mean. So, government likes to kill things.
Are you ready?
They like to kill ideas.
Do you want me to talk yet or not?
Yeah, that's where I'm getting leading you up. I'm queuing you up. Government likes to kill ideas. They like to kill innovation. They like to kill things that'll help humanity as a whole.
Okay.
So.
You didn't read the script, so.
No, I didn't. I'm just kind of speculating. I'm using my speculative life perspectives.
First one's water-powered car.
Ooh, a water-powered car.
Imagine filling your tank. I'll tell you who this website's from, this list. 13 inventions and science experiments that were banned for what most people believe are good reasons. By Ami Hajar Debor.
Okay.
That just was giving
context
who wrote the article.
Shout out, yes.
So your tank with tap water instead of gasoline. Well, Stanley Meyer claimed this controversial innovation would be made possible. His extraordinary design allegedly used fuel cells to split water into hydrogen and oxygen, promising to power a vehicle for 180 kilometers on just 4 liters of water. His invention offered a zero emission alternative to using the using an abundant resource. Scientists wasted no time, though, apparently debunking the concepts. Physics experts pointed out that using volatile fundamental thermodynamic laws, there's no variability evidence of this functionality. Myers soon faced tons of legal troubles and fraud allegations, and further undermined his credibility.
Okay.
Despite generating significant media coverage and public interest, the water-powered car concept failed the basic scientific scrutiny. Conspiracy theorists suggest, though, that big oil companies suppressed this technology, but similar explanations prevailed and never actually worked.
Well, now Mythbusters, and this really grinds my gears about this show, because I like that show, but they did some stuff that even I as a kid was like, hey!
Did you ever write in?
No.
They always said they got stuff wrong.
I know.
And write in.
I know, but this one, okay, so this, they did an episode on this, the water power car and like a hydrogen cell, like he's talking about. I've made one. There was a guy on YouTube that showed you how to make it.
So, I want to, before you go on, I think what they're talking about is the efficiency.
Right.
Not the validity of making.
Correct.
What you're talking about.
Correct.
The efficiency that is stated.
Right.
Go on.
So, basically, I you can find them on YouTube. I forget.
Yeah, like you said, you made one.
Yeah, made one. Very strong, very powerful. I was shocked. I just strapped it up to my, I took jumper cables and hooked up to my truck battery, and it was immediately started producing gas. And the gas they're talking about, it is separating. So it takes the water molecules and it separates into HHO, which is, it's basically two hydrogen molecules and then an oxygen molecule. So it's separating them into that. So it's breaking that bond. So
two hydrogen, one oxygen.
Correct. And when your stoichiometry is correct, it's very combustible, extremely. In fact, it's 100% combustible.
Which one's combustible? The oxygen?
The mixture of the gases, the hydrogen and oxygen. When it's mixed at the right proportion, it's very combustible. And
I thought hydrogen wasn't combustible.
It is.
Or it is.
It is, very. So is oxygen. They both are. But when you mix them just right, it's like extreme, 100%. It burns at 100% efficiency. And your byproduct, it turns it back into water. It recreates the bond. So when you burn this, the byproduct's water again, which is wild. It's almost, it seems like magic.
Well, there's nothing in the universe that's 100% efficient.
No, I know. It doesn't turn it all back into water. It's burning up that gas. But when that combustion happens, the byproduct of it isn't like some toxic gas. Like when you burn gasoline, you have these toxic byproducts. This, the only byproduct is it recreates water. It just reattaches those bonds. So those gases then condense down back into water. But like you said, it's burning off some of it. It's not 100%. But when I say 100% efficiency, it's not, yes, you're right. It's like 99. It's burning out a lot.
I'm not saying it's not high. I just.
Compared to
nothing,
gasoline.
Nothing is 100%.
Right, right.
Nothing in the universe is 100%.
Like I said, it's byproducts water. Gasoline only burns at like, what? Is that like 30 or 20? Under
it's
30?
It's under 50. I know
it's
that.
It's something ridiculously low.
It produces a lot of byproducts.
Yes, for efficiency reasons. So the thought is you take a.
But. Yeah. Okay. So the efficiency. Okay. We're talking about input to output power.
Right.
Turning a normal combustion engine.
Yes.
Is what they're talking about, that the hydrogen doesn't compare.
So that's what
the level.
That's right. That's what they're saying. So, when Mythbusters did, this is where I had the problem. So the way you do it, you have to use very distilled water. You can't have like mineral water or spring water.
Yeah, you just pour water in.
Or even right out of the tap. Yeah. It's got to be distilled clean water, pure water. And then you also have to add a salt to it. Like, so it, the water is more, what's that word? Where electricity can flow through it faster.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name. For some reason, that term is escaping me. But I used conductive. A potassium hydroxide flakes.
Conductive,
yes. So I used that and mixed it with my water. So it was very conductive water. And then you put your fuel cell down in the water. And basically, it just creates an arc. You run a current through it, and you have these metal plates that are separated. So it creates an arc between the metal plates. And that arc separates the bonds in the water, creating your HHO gas, which is very flammable. So, go on. The way Mythbusters did it, they didn't put a salt or nothing in the water. They didn't use distilled water. When they turned the machine on, it did create an HHO gas, but very, 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 very minimum.
But isn't that what Stanley Myers did, though?
Is what?
Basically, he said you could pour tap water in it.
Pretty much, yeah.
But you can't, is what you're saying. That's where we're getting with why Stanley Myers was lying or mispresenting the facts to sell the idea. Because that's what Mythbusters, you just said it, they just poured in straight water.
Straight water, but what I'm saying, they didn't put no cattle, yes.
Stanley Myers stuff, he was just saying, you just take water out and it runs.
Yeah, I mean, it probably could, maybe, but.
That's what he did.
It's not efficient.
That's what I'm saying. Mythbusters tested not what you're saying, they tested what Stanley was claiming.
Kind of.
I've seen the thing where he was in Columbus when he was doing it.
When they presented it on the show, though, they said, this is the only way. That's where I was upset.
Okay, so I think they were not testing the idea of a water-powered car. They were testing Stanley Myers' water-powered car and his claims.
We'll have to. We're splitting hairs, but we'll have to go back.
But no, it matters for what.
It does.
Because that's why he got in all that trouble. That's why I believe he got in all that trouble.
Who's
he did
that?
Not Stanley Myers.
Okay.
The guy, because he was in Columbus when he disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Because he took all that money.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, it doesn't do what he said it did.
Right.
And also the giant process. How much did all that stuff weigh?
That what?
To produce the fuel inside.
Hardly nothing.
No, I'm talking for a car-sized amount of power.
Nothing.
You don't know that.
The amount it takes, it's like 4 gallons of water, maybe. No.
Okay, and all the metal?
It's hardly nothing compared to like an engine. You could pick it up.
No, hands. You have to have the engine still.
Oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
You're not getting rid of the engine.
It don't really add much weight at all. Because I've seen people, I've even seen motorcycles built where they built the actual fuel cell thing. I know. But I'm saying the weight itself, it's not too much weight to build these fuel cells. They're relatively light. The biggest weight would be the water itself, and I'd say that the most 4 gallons is more than plenty. I think that's what he said in there, right?
4 gallons for 180 kilometers, which did not, 4 liters, sorry, which did not work.
So they say.
So his models that he left in Columbus did not work.
Okay, gotcha, yeah. But, I mean, we don't know that. We don't know if they've been swapped out. We don't know if they...
I think he was a shyster and he ran.
Could have been.
Because it was an aeroplane company guy Yeah. Was like buying the idea from him.
Yeah.
And the day he sold it, like he left the models and he took the whatever, it was $5 or $6 million and
he could have, but we never heard from him. He could have been murdered. Or he could have been, but he's not the only example of building.
No, and that's what they're saying here is that other people have done it.
Yeah.
And none of them have passed the test of efficiency.
That's what they say.
But the guy, you can watch, I mean, let me see. All right. So hydrogen cell. Now I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen
horsepower because, yeah, look at how much horsepower it takes.
Horsepower to take.
It takes, let's say, the lowest horsepower cars today are like 60 or 70.
Okay.
So you need to produce that much fuel to move the thing.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. To turn the pistons and
to make it worth it.
So
And you got to drag enough of that stuff to do it for a long enough distance.
It's my opinion with, I think it is possible. I think there, I think there's been a lot of.
How much power does a hydrogen cell produce?
I think there's been a lot of trickery and manipulation when it comes to saying like these things aren't possible or it's inefficient. It's not even, don't even consider doing it because it's just not possible due to laws of thermodynamics and stuff like that, which all these laws and theories and stuff I think are just there to put limits on the human brain and what is possible. I think this is possible. I think the way modern day people do it, because with our modern engines, though, it makes it very difficult, but you have to supplement using fuel like gasoline, traditional.
So, you know, Chevron and several of these others already produce a hydrogen engine.
And I believe Honda right now is, Honda just released a new style engine that may turn might make all these electric motors and engines like obsolete. Mm-hmm. They just released this, I think, a few months ago. Their plans for it. They just unveiled it at a recent car show. But I believe Honda is working or just developed a new water powered engine that's supposed to be or hydrogen powered. It's supposed to be hydrogen powered, but it's fueled by water. So I remember reading that a couple months ago. So I'm gonna have to look into that again because it was hard to find that story. But I believe there's wasn't a full-on vehicle. It was a motorcycle engine they were developing. But I think this is the predecessor to it because they kept it secret and under wraps for the whole time they developed it until it was done and ready, and then they revealed it. So we might have to look into that. The Honda. I can't remember the name of that engine, though. Maybe I can do a quick. It should be in my search history, I would imagine.
So, yeah, right now it's saying
the Honda V3 engine.
It's so they have truck-sized ones.
Okay.
They're just not. So for a semi to go 235 kilometers, it would need to haul with it for that distance a bathtub's worth of water, around 200 gallons.
Okay. For a semi?
Yeah.
So that would be to pull it, to run it through like the semi-sized style engines and stuff, right? Yeah.
So it would need, which versus about 13 gallons of fuel the other way.
Yeah. Hmm.
But they make them.
Hmm. Interesting.
There are trucks, they say. So there's companies like MRMI that uses it for more short distance trucks.
Yeah.
Because they're, for long haul distance, there's no infrastructure for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're just considered extremely insufficient for long distances.
Yeah. I don't know. In my opinion, I think there's designs and I think it's possible. I think it is possible to build an engine that burns hydrogen gas that can move a vehicle or a person that can. I 100% believe it is possible.
I'm telling you they exist. I'm talking the efficiency is what is.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. And I know they exist. I think it is possible for an efficient engine to be built that can run solely off water. And I think that technology is being suppressed. I think it's not being given to the public. And I think anytime anyone comes close to it, it gets thwarted and hidden.
So they're stackable cells right now is what they're putting in cars.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big thing in South Korea, China, and Japan right now. They produce about 100 kilowatts per cell in medium-sized car stack. They only are operating around 40 to 60% efficiency in basically of energy into usable power.
Mm-hmm.
So they're running into problems with like the amount of it takes and being able to use that power at one time during the chemical process.
Okay.
But they have them. You can buy a car right now. Now they're saying that, yeah.
It's like
it's wasted heat capture is the problem in cars right now.
Yeah.
So they say in models that you can build, like basically on the ground, they're 85 to 95% efficient.
Okay.
But whenever you generally have to fit them into a fuel cell into a car, they drop between 40 and 60% due to the heat capture problems.
Gotcha.
But they have them. You can buy one right now and put it in your car.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think a lot of technology, like that's what this whole episode's about, is technology suppression. And I think this is one of them. I think
I don't think anything's being suppressed.
I do. I don't know. It just so we can control people. A lot of stuff's just about control, just like the whole electric car movement, you know? All these electric cars still are powered by diesel fuel, all these pump stations and everything.
It depends. That is not a true statement.
Okay. Most of it. Most of these charging stations are powered by diesel fuel.
Charging stations.
Yes.
But when you charge at home, they are not powered by diesel fuel.
No, I know that. But you'd also don't fill up your tank at home like all the time, like people do with gas.
But
when you're on the road and you need to travel, you're still using diesel fuel.
Or you do the hotels and stuff like that. That's on the grid.
Right. It's on the grid.
And you can't say that they're all using diesel.
No, just charging stations that are out in the...
Some of the boonie charging stations are, because the grid can't support it way out there.
Mm-hmm. And then where is all this electricity still coming from? Like, it doesn't just pop up out of thin air.
No, it's power plants. So it can be hydrogen power plants.
Right.
It can be nuclear. It can be coal fire.
Mm-hmm. And people just think, oh, it's electric, you know, it comes from electricity, you know, it's stuff needs to be burnt and used to generate it. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's why Stanley Myers' thing failed, is the way he talked. I mean, you've watched his videos, haven't you?
No.
It's the way he talked, because he's like, you were just doing some, like when you get grandiose and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then people that are his competition start picking those things he says apart.
Mm-hmm.
Where he was being called a liar then, because he was an exaggerator.
Yeah. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, but not when you're trying to get a new thing out on the market and take over.
That's how all the companies do it, especially nowadays.
Yeah, but they already own the market.
Right, exactly.
You have to walk a special line to get a new product
to get new one in. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying, is why like he got ripped apart. And like that's probably why Mythbusters did what he did, because he was saying these matter-of-fact things.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was just reading, like you said, like you build your hydrogen cell on the ground.
Yeah.
You can get it up to 95 whatever percent efficiency or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But all these companies that are putting them in cars, that, you know, it drops because of this, that, and the other, and room, and...
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's all a hoax.
Portable baby cages.
Portable baby cages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's abandoned. Cramped city apartments left no outdoor play space for infants.
Oh.
Until portable baby cages offered a terrifying solution.
Yeah, I've seen this.
Patented by Emma Reeds of Spokane, Washington in 1922, a wire enclosure attached to a window frame, dangling infants several stories above the ground for fresh air. Each cage roughly measured 3 foot long, 2 foot high, and 2 feet deep. Just enough space for a baby to play out the suspended window.
Mm.
Parents in dense metropolitan areas like London and New York generally embrace this bizarre solution, believing outdoor exposure would greatly improve their children's health, despite the obvious risk. The danger quickly became apparent with wind gusts, falling debris, air pollution, and dozens of babies falling.
I think this should have been a first sign that we're not meant to be living in big cities and captivity.
Children welfare activists condemned the catastrophic adventures as death traps. City officials eventually developed extremely strict standards, forcing these dangerous devices to be marked.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of big buildings, like, you can't open windows anymore, stuff like this.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, this is an invention, I think. Oh, yeah.
Then they switched them for cats.
This should be maybe not.
You can still buy these.
Yeah. But
they're
saying
for cats now.
This is a practice. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't allow. But again, I think that's a sign. That should have been a sign to humanity. Why are we cramming ourselves into these cities where we're all living on top of each other, and the only outlet for our baby, our infant children, is to shove them in a wire cage outside of a, you know, a 40-story window? That should have been a wake-up call for humanity a little bit, but nah. Gotta work tomorrow. Gotta punch the clock, or the man's gonna take away my house.
The William X Jet. The William X Jet nearly revolutionized personal transport with its 60-mile-per-hour hovering capabilities an intuitive body-controlled flight system. The single-person vertical takeoff and landing aircraft used a modified Williams F-107 turbine fan engine to stay airborne for up to 45 minutes, presenting exciting possibilities for military reconnaissance and urban mobility. Military testing exposed fatal flaws in this, however. The U.S. Army eventually the prototype, but discovered helicopters outperformed them in every single perceivable measurement.
Oh, nice.
Excessive fuel consumption, servo limiting range, the noise level, unsuitable for urban environments, doomed the project. They literally some of the times blow windows out.
So they made a very inefficient and effective plane.
Have you seen what this is? It's not a plane. It's a bucket you ride in.
Oh, it's that thing. Oh.
You are sitting on top of a single jet engine.
That looks like a... Oh, shoot.
No wonder it's banned. It went 60 miles per hour.
Hmm. So military use only.
No, the military was like, we're not using this.
Yeah. At least not in our country and not in public use. We'll go to like South America.
Several people died in the testing.
This would be that thing that they were flying around South America, you know, hiding those...
The miners.
Yeah, the miners that were...
Those are cartel people.
Yeah, where do you think they got these from? We sold it to them.
Oh, now they have drones and stuff you can ride on.
Oh, this was the predecessor. No, they get this technology.
This, yeah, you don't want this. And first off, it's ungodly loud.
Yeah, what's scary? Said
pretty much anybody who used it was deaf.
Oh gosh.
And you die. Like people would die in the testing because you couldn't turn very well with it.
It's wild.
So you just fly into a building and smash at 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, we'll reinvent these and have robots piloting
so,
them.
So keep in mind, this is the mid-1980s.
Yeah.
They invested $6 million into trying to make it safe. And they abandoned the program after they lost too much personnel.
Maybe this sounds like some guy, military guy's like side project he was allowed to...
Though there was a personal jetpack dream, the X-Jet crashed. But there are subsequent VTO, which is the same kind of genre of thing,
okay.
Concepts that were turned into modern-day jetpacks from this.
Okay. What was that guy called that they seen flying over?
Jetpack Man.
Was it just Jetpack Man?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There you go.
A lot of people believe he was a balloon.
Yeah, so did that guy that thought Mothman was a balloon.
No, there's a guy right now that I follow that he flies a hoverboard. Like
flies it?
He stands on top of basically a drone, like a drone board.
Okay.
And it carries him and he surfs like through cities and stuff like that. You got to watch him. He's crazy. Huh. But he has to call the FAA anytime he's using it. And when during the government shutdown, he was like, I don't know what to do because there's nobody in the FFA towers or the FAA towers.
He's got free reign.
So he was flying. So he's flying through streets and stuff like that over cars.
Yeah, why not? How high did he get off the ground?
He was only ever like 40 feet at the most because he's like, there's a lot of rules.
Yeah.
But he's like, he'd highly advise nobody doing it because you'll kill yourself with like telephone wires. And
oh, yeah.
He's like, nowhere is made for this.
That's pretty cool, though. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, make country, like not a city.
No, because of birds and branches and bugs. He was talking like how little of a thing it takes to throw it off.
Mm.
And then you just die.
Mm. Parachute.
And that's why like hover cars, because the next thing I'm going to talk about is the aero car.
You need one of those motorcycle suits that inflates when you fall.
There you go. But that's why this stuff never, because like everybody's like, why don't we have flying cars? We had the invention. We're going to talk about the aero car next. It's just the danger levels of them.
Not with the right fuel source of the engine. Well, look at about, flubber.
I'm talking about failing.
Perfect flubber, perfectly safe. A sentient like goo.
A car wreck, you know, there are bad car wrecks, but a lot of car wrecks people walk away from, right? More than not. Like yeah. You walk away from a car wreck.
Yeah.
Airplane crashes, no. It's the opposite.
I don't know. Depends how bad the crash is.
Especially in these little things that go like 80, 90 miles an hour and you're like.
That's pretty bad.
In a tube.
So we need the flubber. We need the flubber engine.
So the Avro car. The Avro car is the U.S. military's most ambitious attempt to create a real-life flying saucer during the Cold War. It literally looks like a flying saucer. Like it's a big metal dome.
Yeah. I mean.
It's shiny and everything.
Yeah. Was this like their joke? Like, look, guys, we're really trying to work on this.
No, this is one they did not release what it was for a long time after.
Yeah.
Reverse engineer. This disc-shaped aircraft measured 18 feet in diameter and drew its power from Continental G69 T9 jet engines.
Mm.
So it had three of those in it.
Mm.
It was highly overpowered.
You think there was just their attempt to like build them with our current technology, like basics?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
The Joint Army and the Air Force project attempted to harness the coronal effect for lift and propulsion, aiming to create a revolutionary high-speed reconnaissance vehicle. Flight tests revealed an embarrassing reality, though. Test pilots couldn't push the prototype beyond 35 miles per hour. The vehicle suffered persistent stability problems, excessive fuel consumption, and frequent control losses that would fling it out of control, killing everybody in it.
Yeah, it's like a Tesla auto-driving car.
It would literally fling people over the mountain.
Yeah.
And you would just never see them again.
Gone.
So this is 100% some of the UFO sightings.
Like, oh, yeah.
Look at that UFO going to Mach 10. Yeah, because there's two dead guys in it that are about to crash into a mountain.
Yeah. And they did. Oh, look at those black helicopters flying over there to recover it. Yeah. Huh. Weird.
Oh, yeah. All the people, like, all the government, they're like, the government's rushing to cover. Yeah, because there's two army dudes in it dead.
Yeah. Test dummies.
So this was military officially finally admitted defeat in 1961 after pouring in the, in, not in modern day money, but in their money, $10 million into development.
Mm. Yeah, they accepted defeat, quote unquote.
They moved on to other things.
Yeah, bet. Oh, they're like, oh,
this
wait.
May have been their version of like trying to copy, like seeing UFOs and like trying to be like, well, let's see if we can make one.
I wonder if like the higher ups like got to a team together and they're like, let's see what they can do, mm-hmm. see if they can develop it, and if they can, we know what we got ain't so special.
Mm-hmm.
And it failed, and they're like, good, we're still on top.
There were pieces of this, even though it was a spectacular failure. There were pieces of this technology that carried into a lot of our modern day stuff, like the jets that land like vertically.
Oh gosh, like Elon's rockets.
No. Like we have the fighter jets that can like stop, like land and hover down.
Oh, like that. Okay.
That technology came from this experiment.
Nice.
So it could land in like that stuff.
Yeah.
The problem is when it got flying, there's every once in a while it would fling itself and go mock, you know, 30 liquefying people.
Like the Tesla car that was like driving through that town going 110.
Gosh.
Because, the automatic, the AI failed. Sensors failed. Wow, weird.
Here's the next banned one. The super swimsuit.
This sounds like fun.
Polyethylene-infused swimwear reduced water resistance by 24% while compressing muscles, shattering 130 world records before authorities intervened. The Speedo LZR Racer and similar designs enhanced buoyancy, optimize body position in water, minimize fatigue through muscle compression. Athletes wearing these high-tech garments documented that in 2008, the Beijing Olympics, capturing 94% of the swimming gold medals. Who beat him?
It was all Michael Phelps.
Each suit was only about $500.
Hmm. So it's banned for competition. It's not banned like...
Yeah, so that's what they're saying. This immediately was creating discrepancies, though, between competitors. Whose teams could afford them and whose teams couldn't.
Welcome to the world.
But that's not what the Olympics are for.
Well, it kind of is.
Now, there's always from somebody from like some random African country winning gold and stuff like that.
That's like the good stories where they overcome all the cheating that every other country does with
the
technology.
The performance advantage proved so dramatic that FINA, which is the International Swimming Federation, recognized the fundamental threat of competitive fairness and banned the suit in 2010. Forcing the sport to be back to athletics, the super swimsuit EK or era sparked debate where it draws a line between innovation and unfair advantages in sport. I want one of these things.
It'd be sweet. My biggest thing I'd be afraid of is like I jumped in the water. You know, you do like the pencil thing and you sink down really fast. I feel like
it does change your buoyancy and water resistance.
So it makes you sink?
It can.
So that would be my fear. I would do a pencil thing and like shoot 40 feet down immediately.
You would.
And I would drown because I couldn't swim back up fast enough.
Next one is Stick'Em.
Oh, Stick'Em. Okay, this is a football thing.
Yep, it's just grip paste.
So what was this? The guy from, it was a football player from the Raiders, Lester Hayes. Was that his name? He was basically known for Stick'Em. And
yeah, the human fly trap or fly paper.
Yeah, was that his name?
He transformed himself into human fly paper.
Is that what it says? Is that his name, though?
No. Raiders quarterback, Lester Hayes.
Yeah, that's what... Okay, so I was right.
You said... You did not say Lester, did you?
Yeah, Lester Hayes. Listen to the tape. We got the tape. We're literally recording.
But he called himself the human flypaper.
Yeah, so what he would do, and you can look up videos, I would encourage, and I'm not, I used to love sports, I used to love, I still do love organized sports, but I hate professional sports anymore. I even hate the college stuff because it's become the same dang thing. So Lester Hayes, yeah, he would literally grab this goo, and you can watch film of him, and he had this big, like, bucket of it. And it was like orange and brown.
That's stickum.
He would rub it all over his hands.
Old stickum.
He'd rub it all up his arms. He'd rub it down his legs. He'd rub it all over him. And he was covered in this goo. And it looked disgusting. And they'd play it. And he would grab onto you.
And he'd just stick to you.
He'd stick to you. Like, it was crazy. It was very much cheating, yes.
Well, that's the whole thing. It was banned in 1981.
After, because of him.
Because, like, it was named the Stick'em Rule.
He would cover himself in it and grab onto you. Now,
he ruined it for everybody else. Because everybody else was just putting it on their hands.
Just a little bit. No, he gobbed it.
Yeah, so he ruined it for everybody else.
I'd encourage anyone that has any interest in that, just check that out. Look up some old video of it, him putting it on, because it was disgusting. But it was, I mean, it's hilarious. And looking back, it's part of the rules. You can do whatever you want like that. So why not do it? When we were in high school football, reveal something a little bit. We used to get these things called, you might know what they are. They're the little, like, rags, but they're like really tacky rags.
Okay.
And you know what I'm talking about? And you peel open the package and you, like, basically rub down cars with them to get all the, like,
all the little dirt,
and sure, dust imperfection, but they're really sticky. And what we used to do is we used to take them and rub down our footballs with them, before games, after the refs would check them. We'd rub them down, go back, rub them all down with that. And then I would take my football gloves and I'd Ziploc them in a baggie and I'd put that in between them and I'd pull all the air out and let them sit like that for a week. So when I pulled them out on game day, I could touch a football with my finger and I'd catch it. It'd stick. Mm. It was awesome stuff. Wouldn't stick them, but there you go.
Little, cheaters.
Yep. Hey, anything to get by.
Tesla's death ray.
Ooh.
Nikola Tesla envisioned a particle beam weapon capable of generating intense targeted energy to the theoretical range of numerous miles. He conceptualized it as a defensive weapon to end all wars, spending years refining the ideas, claiming it would revolutionize warfare. Tesla estimated development cost $25,000, which in the early 1900s was
a lot of money,
but faced technological limitations of his day.
Okay.
So that's just his hand. He just, the pieces he needed did not exist.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Despite his efforts, Tesla never produced a functional prototype. The concepts raised significant ethical and security concerns as well. Someone was believed to steal the blueprints to this, which led to severe security issues, well as over the argument that the technology remained theoretical. Tesla's broader works on wireless energy transmission influenced later research in direct energy weapons. But the death ray itself became more of a myth than reality as its blueprints were stolen and Tesla never had the pieces to make one.
Wow. Okay, so it's, I love that. Like, this band, no, we can't do this. Yeah, we have
direct energy weapons.
Like, are very real.
No. They're banned for us to make. Like, you're not allowed to make
civilians.
Them.
Ah, but the military can do it and strap it onto an airplane and fly it right over your house. Hey, that's fine. Totally cool for that to happen.
I didn't know about this one. This next one. Electrified water. Could running electricity through your drinking water cure diseases and boost vitality?
I've heard of this, actually.
Early 20th century consumers paid handsomely for it. Various devices emerged claiming that infused drinking water with electrical charges promised everything from hangover cures to disease prevention to cancer cures.
Hmm.
One particularly bold marketing claim suggested electrified water contained 500 more light percent more life force than ordinary water.
Hmm. So,
what does that statement even mean?
Okay, so what they're saying is, so life force is basically like they say it's your life energy. It's the energy within your body. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the electricity that keeps your heart pumping, your brain neurons firing. It's that energy within us that keeps us going. So what I've seen about this, it's not so much, so water, you know, holds memory, right?
Sure.
And water is like a very, it's almost like water's alive a little bit, but it's like almost conscious, almost like we just said, it holds memory. And, when you run it through a certain frequency, this is the thought behind it from what I understood in the past when I was, I guess, looking into this stuff, because I almost thought about getting one or making one. But people will run their water through like a certain frequencies. even run it through frequencies, and then they'll even run it through like a copper spiral shape, mm-hmm. basically, that they run it through when they're running it through these frequencies. And supposedly, it does change the quality of the water. So if water can hang on, if it has memory and hang on the shapes and idea, or hang on the shapes, basically, running it through a certain frequency changes the shape of the water, in theory, for a more energetic, positively charged water, like positive as in like
so
higher frequency rather than lower frequency negative things and thoughts.
Why this was banned,
mm-hmm.
is even though they say they found no evidence supporting any health benefits,
mm-hmm.
there were potential hazards with doing this,
because
running an electrical current could cause impurities or have chemical reaction, changing the chemical composition of the water. And it can alter the pH to dangerous levels,
mm-hmm.
causing stomach erosion.
Like acidic or basic?
Either way.
Yeah.
It can move it. Because with it, every point one you move is 100 times more potent, like more acidic or basic.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you're moving that goalpost.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So it was killing people, they said, basically. Or causing like stomach cancers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was like eating acid.
Or base. Or alkali, whatever. Yeah. I've also read the same thing.
The impurities at the time was a huge issue.
Oh, I believe it, yeah.
Causing all kinds of chemical reactions. Like, if there's any nickel in the water, there's a chemical produced through that that's just lethal to us.
Toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've also read, because they say basic water's better for your body. That's just what they say. I mean, a health thing. You see it, but you see it everywhere where it's like, naturally out, or alkaline water. You see that everywhere, mm-hmm. where it's like a 9.0, whatever.
Where have you seen there's a 9.0?
It's not that crazy, but I'm being exaggerating a little bit. But it's on that end. It's the far end of the scale for water, you know, drinkable water. So it's not. But if you test your water, I used to do this. So you test certain brands of water. Some brands are naturally alkaline. Most brands are not. A lot of brands are acidic, like Dasani and Aquafina. Well, the basic ones.
Where you're at, what country you're getting water from?
For sure. Yeah. But like Deer Park, I remember testing Deer Park, that brand. It's naturally alkaline. It's not.
Isn't that Chicago tap water?
Not Deer Park. I think, I don't remember. I don't, not Deer Park though.
Deer Park's bottled in a city.
Either way, it was alkaline.
It's like packaged tap water.
I don't know. I don't remember. It's been a while since I did that research. But either way, so they make these machines too that you can run your water through at home and they naturally alkalize your water. And they sell them as like health beneficial things, which I'm all for drinking alkaline water. But with these machines, what they do is they run it through like this filter. And then when it pops out the other end, it's natural. And yeah, it's because it's dumping metals into it. It's dumping metal into your water.
That's how you change.
Yes. But when it comes
water,
out the other.
So, okay. I'm going to make this very clear. This is what I know a lot about.
Uh-huh.
The chemistry of water.
Correct.
Specifically water acidity.
Yeah.
Water, I think, is 7.0 flat. Anything,
right.
Anything that you move water's pH,
mm-hmm.
that's stuff in water.
Correct. And that's how this thing works. It's dumping these metal.
They all work.
Yeah, I don't agree with him. I don't think you should have any of those machines.
I think it's like 7.0 or something. I used to have it written down.
What?
The actual
balances?
Like 100%. H2O, nothing else dissolved in it. What I think it's zero. I think it's just 7.
Okay. Is that naturally alkaline?
No, it should be in the middle.
Okay.
Because the scale is 14.
Gotcha. I don't know. All I know is I staying away from those machines that make your water very alkaline. And I just don't think that's healthy.
It is 0.07 and it fluctuates. And we're talking not registrable by normal things by temperature. Slightly.
Okay.
So water itself has a slight flux.
Yeah.
But to most machines, you're not going to, like, it's still going to show 0.07, like 7.00,
mm-hmm.
no matter what temperature.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about parts, like hundreds of thousands.
Per million?
Not that extreme, but you'll start seeing like tiny little changes with temperature.
Gotcha.
But it's at 25 degrees Celsius, which is 77 degrees Fahrenheit, it's exactly 7.00000.
Okay.
Tap drinking water goes all the way from 6.0 to 8.5. And it's, like I said, that's only influenced by dissolved substances.
Right, that's within it. Ugh, tap water. Careful about your tap water. Test your tap water.
I've never found a 7. There's no such thing. That's lab water.
Oof.
Mm. I mean, because you can't. If water exists on this planet in an environment, it's got something in it. It's what water likes to do. It's natural. The natural dissolver.
You have to like distill it or something in a perfectly
reverse osmosis.
Sterile. Yeah. Like,
it would take a lot.
Yeah.
And that would make you sick if you drank it.
Yep. You shouldn't, like distilled water, you can't drink straight distilled water too much because
it'll make you sick because it's pulling the stuff out of you.
It's got nothing in it. Yeah.
Jeff Gordon's T-Rex race car.
Oh, what?
The T-Rex race car dominated NASCAR in its 1997 appearance. Officials immediately changed the rules to prevent its return. This custom-built Chevy Monte Carlo named after Chase engineers Rex Stump exploited rule loopholes that created unpredictable aerodynamic advantages. This innovation chassis and suspense design system delivered extraordinary handling and high speeds, allowing Gordon to win the All-Star race by more than 1 second, which is an eternity in NASCAR racing.
Wow. That's why everyone hates Jeff Gordon. I thought it was just because he was...
Officials watched in disbelief as the T-Rex made competitors look like they weren't even racing or they're racing from a different class. NASCAR quickly recognized the threat to the competitive balance and rewrote regulations outlawing these designs and any similar designs.
Hmm.
Gordon's team used the vehicle in just one more race due to the controversy it generated. The T-Rex became legendary as the best race car that never raced again and fundamentally changed NASCAR's approach to innovation boundaries.
Hmm. That's funny. Oh, technology is just changing every single sport. It's just why I don't like them anymore.
When was that? 1997.
See, I thought everyone hated Jeff Gordon because he just looked, he didn't look like a, I don't know.
A NASCAR?
Yeah, he didn't look like NASCAR driver. He didn't talk like NASCAR driver. No, everyone around here watches NASCAR and listen. I don't.
There's a NASCAR house around the corner.
Right, exactly. NASCAR's very big in this area, and I never understood it. Never got it.
It's fine.
Yeah, so I don't know.
If you go to them, they're a lot more fun to go to.
Way different. But watching them on TV?
It's different, I guess. Like, it's kind of like the same thing with football. Like, you're watching your team, your guy, your person, your gal, whatever. So and when you get to go see them, like maybe like as a kid,
that's different.
You get hooked.
Yeah, if you
and
get
then
to go,
you get to watch. Like yeah, but no, I mean they're as far as I remember, they're. I think it's a pretty affordable sport to go and participate.
Yeah, but I still can't justify ever watching it on television.
But because you're not into it
at all.
That's what I'm saying. If you go and you got a person you like to watch, like the Ohio State, like
oh yeah,
and so you. I hate watching football on TV, but I understand that if that's your team, yeah, I want to watch the Ohio State game today.
Sure.
Oh. It's the same thing with NASCAR. It's just, that's your team, that's your person.
Here he comes again. You're going around. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's not exciting to you, because it's not exciting.
No,
it's not your thing.
He's changing the tire. Look, he changed the tire really fast that time.
That has always impressed me.
Now, that part's impressive, but it's like
change out everything.
Yeah. In like 5 seconds. Okay. That part's amazing. Then they're back on the road. I turn left again. He's going to pass. Nope. Maybe he'll pass him in 3 laps. Maybe in 8 laps. Who knows?
Laser pointers.
Hey, this is like the death beam from Tesla.
Presentation needs visual aids, but laser pointers evolved from helpful tools into potential weapons capable of causing instant eye damage and even bringing down planes.
Yes.
But standard models only emit So it's 1 MW of power, which is just like how they measure light power.
Megawatt?
Is it maybe a megawatt? But unregulated versions can exceed more than 1,000 MWs.
That's a lot.
Strong enough to cause permanent blindness, create visual beams from miles away. These handheld devices project narrow beams of coherent light where legitimate applications in business, astronomy, construction, education. Safety concerns mounted as high-powered lasers become widely available, eye injuries, dangerous disassociation from drivers, and several aircraft incidents prompted the FDA to limit consumer laser pointers to less than 5 MWs.
So that's what they're limited to.
Yeah. Shoot. Which still can hurt your eyes, but they're not going to bring down a plane.
You ever seen people where they pull like the Blu-ray lasers out of their...
Yeah, and use them as a gun?
Gosh, it's crazy.
Enforcement challenges persist due to the easy online access of powerful lasers marketed as survival tools and burning lasers. Mm. That's how they're getting around it. They're not calling them like laser
pointer lasers. Yeah, this is a burning laser.
This is an igniting laser.
This is a cauterizing laser.
Regulatory agencies continue working on balancing legitimate use and public safety, focusing on aircraft incidents where pilots reported over 6,000 laser strikes annually.
Gosh.
Or they're just flying there.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. I can't imagine being a pilot and your whole like cab lighting up green or red.
Being blinded?
Yeah.
Hitting you right in the face?
Well, laser hurts at close distance when it's that big. Like, because when you're further away, you know, it gets a little bigger.
Right.
So,
God. It's still causing plane crashes. So
no, it's terrible.
You have to be blinded.
Yeah, you have to be. Unless it's burning up your electronics, which I don't doubt that. But
or messing with radar. I don't understand how that stuff works, so it could be.
Radar?
Mm-hmm. Like making basically the plane goes blind.
Doesn't know where it's up, what's up or down.
And it starts nosediving.
Yeah.
Let's gravity take hold.
Gosh.
The DDT.
The wrestling move?
No. The chemical.
Oh, okay.
Agent Orange.
Because I thought they did ban it after, you know, Jake the Snake dropped it a little too hard sometimes.
This remarkable insect-killing power saved millions from malaria before scientists discovered it was devastating an entire ecosystem for over a decade. The Oregon chloride insecticide, together with an environmental half-life of 15 years, revolutionized pest control during World War II with unprecedented effectiveness. Basically, yeah, you want to get rid of bugs, you put DDT on it.
It works.
The guy earned the Nobel Prize in 1948, and farmers worldwide embraced the low cost and extraordinary pest-killing capacities.
Safe and effective.
Evolutionary scientists eventually uncovered DDT's dark legacy. The chemical bioaccumulations through the food chain, concerning in predators like mostly birds like bald eagles, whose eggshells thinned catastrophically, exposing them, almost led them to extinction. There was a book called The Silent Spring, which basically showed that there was several years where no birds were born.
Oh, gosh. That's terrible.
So there's no birds chirping.
Yeah.
Because of DDT.
Yeah.
Which this book specifically led to the U.S. banning DDT in 1972.
Hmm. Good thing they approved it in the first place.
Well, they didn't even know.
Yeah, I know.
They're like, oh, we're getting murdered by mosquitoes. Let's spray. This stuff kills bugs.
Good.
Limited applications for disease control continues in certain countries, but DDT fundamentally changed how we evaluate our environmental impacts of chemicals and created modern environmental agency regulatory frameworks.
This might be one of the few examples where it's better to ask permission than forgiveness first.
That's it melts bugs.
Use it. Do it, dude.
I'm going to skip this next one.
Uh-oh. That's not good.
I'll read the name for you. We're not going to go into it.
Okay.
The Blonsky birthing configuration or centrifugation.
Yeah, let's just go on the next one.
It's a type of centrifuge.
Oh, I don't know what that. I don't know how that. I'm not equipped.
Gosh. That just crushed a lot of women and babies.
Oh yeah, let's move on. Let's move on from that one.
It would just spin him and spin the babies out of him.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, let's not. Let's not. I'd rather have Ace Ventura.
This isn't on the list. Do you know what? We'll do this for a game show version of this one day. Guessing inventions first, what they were invented for, not what they're used for today.
Oh, okay.
So I'll give you one for right now before I read the last one on this list.
Okay.
Chainsaws. What were chainsaws invented for?
Hmm.
Keep in mind, the whole list is...
Oh.
They are different.
Amputations.
That's a good guess.
Yeah.
That's where I guessed when I was listening to this on a different show.
Okay.
And they did the same game show thing.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, amputations, because, you know, they were using a bone saw to do it, and it's fat, you know, because it was hand done.
Right,
hand done chainsaw, so it wasn't like today.
It's like this hand... egg beaters.
Nope. It was to widen the birthing canal when women were giving birth to make sure the baby lived.
What?
Look it up.
What kind of chainsaw is that?
It worked.
You think? No doubt it works. It cuts down the trees.
Well, no, this is like a hand, like crank chainsaw, like the egg beaters. But they would use it to basically like trim up bone and everything down there. So they make sure the baby fit.
Let's go on to the next one. That's too much. That's not right.
And somebody is watching that like,
hey.
That'd be really good for trees.
Maybe someone was watching it like, hey, I think that's supposed to be used for something else.
No, it worked really good for what it was for. They made a hole big enough for the baby to walk out.
Yeah. That's it. That's called C-section.
No. C-section's higher.
No, that's better, in my opinion.
Now, cause see, this is coming from the bottom using existing hole and just opening it all the way up through the bone.
Yeah. That's terrible. Poor women.
Yeah, they hurt for a minute, but they didn't have anything to say very quickly after.
Well, I'd imagine not. All right, next one.
Lawn darts.
Oh, lawn darts are banned?
Yeah, they killed like 8,000 or 9,000 kids in 1 year.
Oh, dang.
It was like the most endangered. I do want to do another episode. There's one company that made all of the deadliest toys like ever.
I think we talked about this.
We've talked about him before. Where he kind of dressed like the modern day Willy Wonka. And every one of his toys was like quote unquote educational and that kind of stuff. And he killed so many kids. Like he had uranium kits.
Yeah. We didn't do this on this episode or on the show, did we?
No, we've talked about that. Maybe just me and you talking about it.
Okay.
He had like lead smelting kits for kids. They're huffing in though. Like they're just sitting there huffing lead. This little crucible gets 900 degrees.
See, they don't make toys like they used to. Mm-hmm. Erector sets and these chemistry sets. And
I'm trying to remember his name, the man that ruined Christmas.
I don't know.
Because all these kids would open toys, play with them, and get severely burned, blind, deaf, cancer.
Good toy. Good toys.
Slowly melting into a puddle because the rocks actually glued. Glowed. There's pictures of them in the kits.
Gosh.
And the uranium rocks are like cartoonishly glowing in the box. They're like, got a glowing rock.
Dad, come on, mom. Dad, come on, please.
They're licking it.
Yeah.
It tastes like purple.
What did Ralph Wiggum say? I can't remember what he said. This tastes like something ridiculous.
Anyways, yard darts or jarts. Across 1970s America, families tossed half-pound metal spikes towards targets on the ground until the injuries started to mount up. The oversized projectiles were 4-inch-long steel points. Were meant to be an outdoor game throughout the decades, but in the early 1980s, players would aim them at circular targets on the lawn, and not like horseshoes, but unlike horseshoes, they were potentially lethal. Reality struck tragically, as Consumer Product Safety Commission documented 6,100 lawn dart injuries between 1978 and 1988. Most of them involving children's heads and eyes being impaled.
Gosh, that's so terrible.
And after a mounting pile of deaths, including a 7-year-old girl from California, grieving parents really started to launch a campaign for the ban of these monstrosities.
Just don't buy them.
The problem is they just show up at like parties and barbecues. This is like the block party era of North America.
Right, yeah.
And some guy would be like, and then your little girl's dead.
Yeah. No longer,
The CPSC finally prohibited the sale of lawn darts in the United States in 1988. The case became a landmark example for consumer product regulations, showing how seemingly innocent products can be removed from the market when they have dangerous outcomes. Beyond physical products, even digital content like video games have faced bans due to controversial in these regulations.
Interesting.
That's that list. I had another list, but I think that's pretty much all. Real Network, Real DVDs got banned. Basically, because they were copyright.
So some good. Overall, let's just overview the list. What we did.
Anchored putters.
It seems like some stuff's banned for good. Some stuff banned for devious reasons.
Spring spokes for cars. Incandescent light bulbs.
We could get into the light bulb thing, too.
Spray hair. Wait, why? Spray on hair, specifically.
So incandescent light bulbs are banned?
Certain types of incandescent light bulbs
okay,
are banned.
Okay,
classic invention that brightened up the world forever, century, found themselves on the intervention. But that's why, you may ask, well, these seemingly harmless bulbs are drawing flack for their energy inefficiency, so they have been banned because they're considered energy guzzlers.
Oh, my gosh. So, okay, that's the one I think is devious. So.
Because they last a lot longer?
Well, no, LEDs last a lot longer, but also LEDs run at a certain frequency, which you can catch them on camera if you do like a slow-mo camera. Our LED lights, they're constantly flashing.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that doing to us subconsciously? We don't know. Just the frequencies that the LED lights can put out too, whether the color frequencies, even like that bluish hue, I think can affect you psychologically. Incandescent bulbs are still, you know, basically fire. You know, it's just metal rod heated up super hot that it's red hot glowing light, and then it's exciting the gas also within there. I don't think they're inefficient. They've made them inefficient too. What was that light bulb that was a commission put together with like the light bulbs, the inventors of light bulbs? It was illegal. There's another one for your list. It's illegal to produce a light bulb that can last a certain amount of time.
Yeah, that was, they all got the, is that illegal or did they all agree?
I think they made it illegal.
I thought it was because the four or five companies agreed together that it wasn't, but there's not a law.
Let's see. How should I Google that? Is it legal to make
long-lasting light bulbs, I guess? Because I heard that too, and I thought it was because like the four companies were just agree, like, we don't do that, and then if we see any products that have that, we kind of buy it and blacklist it.
Hmm. Let's see here. Well, I'm trying to search it and trying to find that, whatever that meeting was, because I remember reading about it as well, too. But the only thing that's popping up right now is the banning of incandescent light bulbs and halogen light bulbs. They're banning those as well. The law, let's see here. I can't even find that, Let's try this. What was the meeting that banned long-lasting light bulbs? Oh, okay. Here we go. It's a secret summit in 1924. It was called the Phobos Cartel. Let's see here. They controlled the manufacture and sale of incandescent light bulbs in much of Europe and North America between 1925 and 1939. The cartel took over market territories and lowered the useful life of such bulbs, which is commonly cited as an example of planned obsolescence. So,
it's not a law.
It's not a law.
But it's like you said, it's like the group. The four or five big guys that own all the light bulbs.
Basically, they controlled the market, and they all together decided they're not going. Neither of them are going to produce a light bulb that can last a certain amount of time. That way, they can all compete with each other, just each other, and constantly have their products being bought because light bulbs will only last so long. And now we're on an age where we need light in our house. We no longer have torches. We're using light bulbs. So, as long as they control the whole market, they're going to constantly be seeing returns because people are going to constantly be replacing their light bulbs that only last so long. So if anyone else comes along in the market with a new light bulb that can last a long time, they're immediately smashed because these guys own all the power in the whole market.
Jeez. So I was looking to see if you could still buy like the century bulb.
Mm.
That's that one that's still burning.
Mm, in that firehouse.
Yeah. Because there's the camera on it.
Mm.
I was looking if you could still buy those kind of light bulbs, and you can.
For how much?
The one was $8,000.
Exactly. So it's just impossible. There's no one producing them anymore.
Wait, I wonder if this is like a giant pack of them. Let me check. Yes. Okay. That's why.
But either way, they're not.
There's 1,800 of these in the pack.
You can't go to the store and buy them.
There's still a lot. It's just. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, they're not. Well, they're a ban now. They're incandescent bulbs. You can no longer. They're banning those. You need to have LED. You need to do what the government says.
You can still buy houses or lights that have 60,000 hour lifespans.
Hmm. Just few and far between. If you've ever seen that movie, A Wonka, the new one, the Willy Wonka movie, like the prequel, something very similar happens because Wonka moves in the town and he's trying to sell his new chocolates, like new, innovative, and delicious chocolates that he makes. Well, the three big chocolate makers, they all convene like a secret underground. They pretty much run the whole town because everyone buys only their candy. So they go underground and they make it basically illegal. They work with the police, they work with the law, and they block out Wonka from being able to sell his chocolate in the town. It's just them three only. Even though those three are supposed to be competitors, they're not. They work in tandem together to make sure nobody else is in their circle. So it appears as though there's competition. It appears it's the illusion of choice. We have the illusion of choice in this country, and we're losing the illusion of choice by all these companies that band together and they make all these inventions that are crap. They're crap and inefficient, and they're charging us more and more for them, and it's enough. We've had enough of it. Tales of Daniel and Robosaur. Defy explanation if you're wanting more. All my fightings, government denies. J-Clone guides you through the lies. Flat Earth claims, they say there's no proof. But we know the truth, we're living proof. No life without government's hand. Manipulation across the land. They say we're free, but that's their lie. We see the truth with open eyes. Mouse hole, a mystery unsolved. Tumor sealed, government's involved. Change the world, speak the truth, expose the lies. That's our move. Off the grid, we raise our quail. Homeschool our kids, government's education fail. Collected rain, though it's illegal. Natural resources can't be controlled by their evil. Conspiracies, they're all around. In this shack, the truth is found. Living free from their control. We know the truth, we won't be sold.
If you want to see this show grow and help this show grow, the easiest, cheapest, freest way is to leave us a 5-star review and we'll read your comment on the show. Let us know what you think of the shack. Let us know where you'd like to see the shack go. Let us know if you'd like to meet the shack. Thank you. Truth, we won't be sold. Do good in the world. Positive out, positive in. Unleash the shack in your heart.